For KOSU, I'm Michael Cross, and it's time once again for This Week in Oklahoma Politics with ACLU Oklahoma Executive Director Ryan Kiesel and Republican political consultant Neva Hill. With just 5 days left till Election Day.
Only five?
I know. We want to take a final look at the ballot measures facing Oklahoma voters. Today, we focus on State Question 792, which allows strong beer and wine sales in grocery stores and allows liquor stores to sell non-alcoholic products. Ryan, your thoughts on this measure?
Boy, after this election cycle, this is the most relevant state question that Oklahoma voters
Ryan, Ryan.
How quickly can you get the wine in the grocery stores?
You know, when does this go into effect? This is a difficult state question for a lot of Oklahomans, you know, and I think it goes right back to 1907. We were the first state, the only state to enter this union with prohibition in our Constitution. And then ever since then, every time that we've wanted to amend our alcohol and liquor laws in the state of Oklahoma, whether it was in relation to federal prohibition or after federal prohibition, we've had to do it through constitutional amendment, which has meant that we've had this very cumbersome, clumsy, long, slow process and has led to what most people think of as these archaic and antiquated liquor laws, but they're incredibly difficult to change. And now we've got this ballot measure that many people believe would bring us into a more modern era where you go to other states, one of the people vacation out of Oklahoma, they come back and they're surprised there's wine and strong beer and liquor stores. You go to Texas, people go to Texas and they say, hey, Ryan, will you bring me back some Fat Tire beer from Texas because you can't buy it in Oklahoma? That would bring us into this era, but it also represents, I think, a real threat to the independent liquor stores, the package stores that many of us have come to know in these communities around the state, small and large. What kind of an impact is it going to have on their business model moving forward? And I think Oklahomans are really wrestling with that. They want to support these local small businesses, but at the same time, they want to see us take a step forward and modernize our liquor laws.
Neva.
Well, it has been an interesting campaign because it's a one-sided campaign in terms of just a state question campaign because the yes folks have spent, I think last time I looked, $2.7 million. Yeah. The no folks, about $10,000. So, I mean, it really is a campaign that has been focused, as you say, Ryan, on kind of the concept of let's modernize our beer and wine laws has kind of been the pitch of the proponents, and they have had the most organized forces. I mean, you have not only Walmart and all of the convenience stores and grocery stores and liquor wholesalers and beer distributors, but you also have people like the Oklahoma City and Tulsa chambers and the state chambers. So they're really looking and trying to promote this as an economic issue, as more jobs, keeping money from going out of state. I mean, a lot of issues that they're kind of sidebar to what we're talking about of being a liquor, a change in the laws on the books and basically changing in the Constitution, taking out one whole section and replacing it with a new section of in the Constitution. I do think that when we look at this, I mean, even the concerns that we're hearing from folks about, as you raised the question at the local level with these local retailers, the thing that I think has been lost on both sides of the discussion is this really doesn't go into effect until October of 2018. So there is a time frame to allow this transition to take place, which I think was very deliberative. I think the other component is, even though the polls say that it would win right now in the high 60s, I mean, from polling that I've seen, I think the bigger kind of takeaway is the fact that both sides acknowledge that there will be lawsuits after this. I mean, that it's kind of already set up that it's going to be litigated. There are other issues where the same thing has taken place in states like Arkansas and Minnesota. So there are a lot of things. I think there are a lot of things nationally where people are focused on this particular state question in Oklahoma. I think the other thing is, I think if it passes on Tuesday, there would only be, I think, three more states that have the 3-2 beer, and they're looking at the kind of what happens here for places like Utah and Wyoming and other states where they may follow suit. So it's going to be fascinating to see how the voters finally do respond on this state question, which is the last state question on the ballot.
But probably not the last time that voters in Oklahoma will be voting on alcohol, liquor, beer, and wine.
Oh, absolutely,
questions.
And that's been our history.
And who knows what lawmakers are going to do as
that's
well.
That's right, at the county level as well as at the state level.
Besides state questions and presidential candidates, many Oklahomans will be casting ballots for state representatives and senators. So I was wondering if there were any races the two of you were keeping a close eye on. Neva, let's start with you.
Well, I think it's interesting. When we really look at the overall picture, I think the takeaway is that there will be very little change when the dust settles after Tuesday. There will be a pickup here or there on both sides, but the net effect is that the legislature is not going to change its real composition for the next session. I think the competition appears to be Southeast Oklahoma and Oklahoma County in a few races in terms of where it looks to me like the Democrats are kind of doubling down, seeing some opportunity races, and they have become very close and very competitive. Across the board, by and large, other places, I think we're going to see incumbents do very well, which historically has been the case. 80% of incumbents win, so it's not a surprise. But I think when we really look at where there could be some shifts, I think the Senate Republicans can, I think, look at a good prospect in the Ada seat, Susan Paddock's seat, with Republicans picking that up, although it's certainly a very competitive race. And then I think there are a couple of Republicans in southeastern Oklahoma who are fighting very hard to try to come back. So same on the House side, and I'm sure Ryan has some thoughts on that as well.
Ryan, what are your thoughts on anything you're watching?
I think one of the top races that I'm looking at is Cindy Munson running for re-election as a state representative, elected in a special election. Democratic member of the House, I think one of the hardest working and most thoughtful members of the Oklahoma legislature. And, you know, from the moment that she got elected in that special election, I don't think she took a minute off from knocking doors. And I really see that this is a bellwether district, you know, to really, you know, Neva's talking about, we're seeing some of this, we're beginning to see some Democrats and Republicans, the net effect is a wash, because what we're seeing is that we're trading seats. Rural areas are beginning to go to these Republicans, and Democrats are starting to win urban areas. Cindy Munson is an example of that. And I think that her holding on to that, there are some flips that I'm looking at, you know, Colin Waukee, Jason Nelson's seat, you know, he's running against Bruce Lee Smith. I think Colin Waukee stands
with him not being an incumbent. You know,
that's always an incredibly close race.
Been very close.
Colin's been close against an incumbent, Jason Nelson. Now it's an open seat. I think that he's got a favor there. Mickey Dolenz, I think, stands to pick up a seat that was held by Mike Christian, who's now running for sheriff in Oklahoma County. So that'd be a Democratic pickup. Forrest Bennett looking to become the new voice in the south side of Oklahoma City by defeating a Republican candidate who's running what I think is one of the most desperate and negative campaigns for the legislature in Oklahoma. And then a potential statement campaign. And that's, you know, we talk about rural-urban realignment. This may be an exception to that. John Bennett out in Salisaw, Oklahoma, running against a Democrat, Tom Stites, for the state legislature, for the state house. And that's House District 2. I mean, John Bennett has done everything he could in the last month to embarrass himself, and not just in his hometown or in the state, but nationally. I mean, everything from holding this hate-fueled, bigotry-driven interim study against Islam and Oklahoma Muslims to now in the last week on his Facebook page saying that Hillary Clinton should be subject to a firing squad. And so the people in Salisaw, you know, regardless of their partisan viewpoints, they have an opportunity here to make a statement that that's not the kind of representation that they want in the legislature. So look at that as maybe a statement campaign. If Stites wins out there, I wouldn't say, oh, Democrats are making a comeback in eastern rural Oklahoma. But I do think that it would send a signal that that kind of rhetoric and that kind of activity at the legislature isn't what Oklahomans, regardless of political party, are looking for.
You know, it's interesting, too, when you talk about Cindy Munson, because looking at the campaign fundraising side of it, I mean, it appears that she is the runaway person in terms of the Democrats who have done the best job at fundraising. I think it's over $220,000.
It's incredible.
I mean, that's significant for a House seat for anyone, mm-hmm. incumbent or not, and certainly for a Democrat in Oklahoma County. I mean, that positions her well, and I would assume probably positions her in her own party to be viewed as a leadership type person.
That's right.
Very quickly.
I think leadership in the House, but also when we start looking forward to 2018, some of these other races, whether it's a congressional race or a statewide race, I think Cindy Munson's name really needs to be in that mix.
$8 million raised total so far. I mean, that's pretty amazing for all these. I mean, it's a total amount raised by all, but that's still a lot of money just for state legislative races.
And competing against state questions, competing against national campaigns that are siphoning money out of the state. It's amazing. I mean, there's still a lot of money that's going directly into these campaigns. Some of us, and me included, thought that we might see fewer donations going directly to candidates in the wake of Citizens United, because more independent expenditure campaigns would be taking that money. But it's
And I think it is interesting on the independent expenditures that we're seeing. I think on both sides, they're being very deliberate and very calculating in weighing into races where they have an interest and feel like that they can make a difference. And so we're seeing money spent, but it's not just indiscriminately across the board, just throw it at it and see what happens. I think they're being very focused, and I think we'll see that even more so 2 years from now in those races.
The race for Oklahoma County Sheriff is heating up. On Wednesday, county commissioners delayed a decision to suspend incumbent Democratic Sheriff John Wetzel after an audit showing mismanagement of funds in his office. Meanwhile, Republican leaders are criticizing State Representative Mike Christian for releasing political brochures with fake endorsements. Ryan, what are your thoughts on this race?
Boy, these guys are just holding campaigns together with baling wire at this point, and just hoping that they can make it across the finish line with something that looks like a campaign. The move by the county commissioners was the best possible outcome that Sheriff Wetzel could have hoped for before leading up to the election day. He got a kind of a tepid endorsement from the Oklahoman that said, he's got some problems, but he's better than Christian. Now Christian's got these problems with these fake endorsements and this idea of, we thought that we could just use the Republicans. Like, oh, come on. I think that, Representative Christian's a smart guy. He knows that that's not how endorsements work. If any Republican candidate around the state just picked his name up and put his picture on a mailer and said, well, you're a Republican, I'm a Republican, we get to use that, that wouldn't fly.
Right.
So I really think that, the sheriff's race is just, really in a free-for-all right now, or just a tailspin. And I think that Sheriff Wetzel, given that he's this multi-term incumbent, a household name among most Oklahomans, has a huge advantage in fundraising. Even with his problems, he's probably going to pull this out. But then, that sets up, I think, some real issues with whether Prater brings an indictment, what the county commissioners do after the election. So the sheriff's race, it will be resolved on Tuesday, but his job remains uncertain.
I thought it was interesting that Mike Christian had some endorsements on there. Join me in voting for, and some of the people he had there, Tom Cole, people that weren't even Oklahoma County residents, so they can't even vote for him.
Right, right. Very sloppy, and no question that in those instances, whether you're a Democrat or Republican running for office, that is uncalled for. It should be called out. It's bad. It's just bad campaign behavior, and the voters, they deserve better than that. So I think Ryan is right. This election probably is too close to call. I don't think either side is saying with certainty that they think they've got it in the bag. So there are a lot of very variables in there that set up for what turnout is in Oklahoma County, and whether folks, when they get down ballot, is it familiarity with the name, which whether they're a Republican, Democrat, or independent in the polling booth, or is it the fact that they have a real opinion about whether or not the sheriff deserves re-election based on all the problems that have continued to unfold through the course of the last really couple of years. I think it's fascinating, though. Gary Jones, in his October 18th audit, he outlined, he said, look, you can either conduct further investigation, you can sanction the sheriff, you can temporarily suspend the sheriff, or you can initiate proceedings to remove him. And so the county commissioners kind of fumbled the ball a little bit in this, trying to inject this at the last moment and then kind of pull back, because clearly this is not, it's not a factor either way. The folks that pay attention to this know, the other folks could care less. And so I think the bigger issue, as Ryan says, is after the election on Tuesday, what will happen long term? And I think it's a long way from being decided. Will we see the sheriff? Will there be charges brought at some point? Will there be some attempt to sanction or remove the sheriff? And so I think long term it provides for great instability. Everyone's already in the political pundit circle talking about, will there be a special election and who will run then, and will it will the dust settle and it won't be a Wetzel or won't be a Christian, it'll be some new players on the kind of on the political landscape. So I think this will be a fascinating storyline that's going to go well into next year.
And what a missed opportunity for Christian here. Here's a guy who gets this October audit from the state auditor and inspector that could not be more clear in its criticism of the sheriff's office. And rather than taking that and running a campaign that makes the decision a referendum on whether or not the sheriff should be retained. Should he be rehired based upon the evidence in this audit? Instead, he runs this, you know, as Neva said, this very sloppy campaign right at the end. To me, that's really incredible. I think a smarter, more disciplined campaign, and probably that has more funding, could have really used that in the last. We talk about October surprises. You don't get bigger ones than that if you're a candidate.
Well, you know, Commissioner Maughan, I mean, at the meeting this week, he said basically, look, I had someone call this week and tell me if there had been a regular beat cop or a teacher that had even a hint of suspicion of, you know, some real allegations or impropriety take place, they would already have been removed, suspended, or something would have happened. And why isn't that the case with the sheriff? And it was a good question. I think, you know, the commissioner said, look, I didn't really have a good answer for my constituent. And it is a valid question, I think, to bring forward. It's unfortunately been a very sloppy process all the way through this, and the voters will have to kind of ferret through that and decide what they think.
What I thought was fascinating, though, was this manhunt they just had with Michael Vance. And every time I turned on the TV, who did I see out there?
Standing in the background.
I was seeing Sheriff Wetzel out there in front of the camera. It wasn't a spokesperson, which it usually is.
In uniform.
Spokesperson,
yeah.
It was Sheriff, and I thought, whoever's running Wetzel's campaign is a genius in putting him out in front of the camera.
Well, there's no
for this
question. I mean, Pat Hall, who is one of the ultimate political operatives on the Democrat side, someone who has had a great track record, someone no longer really doing it full-time, but someone has worked with the Sheriff Wetzel, I think, since the beginning, since his first race. And so, I mean, he clearly, when you have folks that understand the political landscape, have been around with any candidate a long time, that does give you a leg up over someone who's coming in, running a county race for the first time, and have some folks that maybe don't have that skill and expertise. I think that's showing up pretty strongly right now in this race.
Yeah, it's no accident that Sheriff Wetzel is one of the most successful political figures in the state of Oklahoma right now. He's got, in and of himself, he's a great candidate, and he's got this team of political operatives around him. And that's why even in the midst of this this audit, and even before the audit, you know, the indictments against the jail, you know, mm-hmm. the idea of, you know, that we're running this national embarrassment of a jail right here in Oklahoma County, you know, he was able to survive a lot of that and deflect a lot of that over to either the county commissioners or to the Department of Corrections. And that's where, if you're going to beat somebody like John Wetzel, you have to you know, do everything right. And, you know, Mike Christian has done everything wrong, especially in this last month. And even if it's close, I think Wetzel's going to pull this one out.
Early voting started yesterday, but the state election board says it's already getting a record number of requests for mail-in ballots, and returns are coming in at 5,000 to 10,000 a day. Neva, is this a sign of a heavy voter turnout? Possibly.
I think it is. I think we're going to see record in absentee. I think we'll see record in early in-person voting, and then I think we'll see a record in folks coming to the polls on Tuesday, and that's refreshing. I mean, one of the things in the 30 plus years that I have been involved in these political campaigns that's been most disappointing. I've mentioned it many times, even on the air here, is the fact that we have such low voter participation. So if out of all of this, we see at least folks coming and exercising their right to vote, and we see those numbers go up where we're not at the bottom nationally, but we move up on the grid, I think that will be one of the real bright spots of this election season, where it's been anything but that overall with the campaigns themselves.
Ryan.
Yeah, you know, and I think that when we look at voter turnout right now, it's these state questions. I think that more than anything else right now, the thing that's going to drive Oklahomans to the polls, because, you know, there is a certain intensity for either Trump or against Clinton. There's not a lot of intensity for Clinton that's out there. But I think that the thing that's really driving folks to the polls right now are going to be these state questions. This has been a great civics experiment for Oklahoma. You know, a lot of times, and we certainly have our share of state questions that have political agendas to them. You know, 790, the repeal of the No Aid to Religious Organizations question. But, you know, really, there are these real, yeah, you know, I think nuanced policy questions that Oklahomans are having an opportunity to vote on, whether it's criminal justice reform or modernizing beer and wine laws. You know, these are the kinds of things that I think excite voters. It should be perhaps a model moving forward that, you know, to engage them, that if the legislature won't do these things, or if we need to, you know, put a carrot out there for the legislature to move in the future, these questions are a way to get people engaged. When we talk about these absentee ballots, If we want to increase this number in the future even more, we get rid of this notary requirement. It's something that's an anomaly for Oklahoma. And you, when you talk to voters that get their absentee ballots and they want to mail it in, the one thing that really stops a lot of people from completing that process has to go find a notary and to get that done. So.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting, too. I was looking at an article just this week about the different state questions initiatives across the country. California, I was stunned that their voter guide, their official voter guide, is 234 pages long because of the number of initiatives and questions, propositions that the voters in California are having to look at on Tuesday. And, I mean, we look at this as a long ballot, but, you know, I hope we don't go that direction, but it was almost frightening to see that number and look at that voter guide and think that folks would have any anticipation that they're really going to plow through that and find out what's on the ballot.
And certainly better than like Missouri that I think has two cigarette tax questions.
Well, let's not forget that we have judge retention questions on the ballot.
Two Supreme Court,
and I think that's going to be fascinating because a lot of folks are going to get to the polls, get to their ballot, and go, "What is this?" And then the question is, do we vote no? Just because we don't know, or we basically are not, you know, have a very negative feeling about the overall context of it. I mean, there could be some surprise there that no one's anticipating, and it's interesting because the judges can't have a campaign. They don't raise money. They don't mount a campaign. So they're kind of sitting.
Campaigns can be mounted against them.
Yeah. And so they're kind of sitting ducks, so to speak, on that ballot with folks really having very low information as they go into the polls.
And of course, raises the question again: should we even be having judges on the ballot? Because that just puts them, that makes them political.
Yeah. And you know, I think the idea that you can remove the political viewpoints from judges entirely, you know, that's a little bit of a hard argument. But to put them on the ballot like this does, I mean, you know, these judges are making very difficult decisions, and oftentimes what happens, and we see this in the legislature, legislators look at the outcome of a judicial decision, but they don't necessarily look at the rationale.
But those outcomes then
determine how they feel about the justices. And that's not really fair.
And no matter what, the justices will always have somebody who is upset about their decision, sure. no matter what.
We haven't seen a roller coaster on this in past history where we have thrown them out. So the idea that they won't be retained, I mean, at least historically speaking, it would appear that that still will be the case, but it does kind of give pause when you look at this and you see if we see a record high turnout. If we see 60% or 60, you know, plus percent of Oklahomans going to the polls, that's a big jump. And when we look at even setting the record at, what was it, 40% for Super Tuesday, and that was, you know, I mean, we were, you know, that was a big turnout. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I think it will be fascinating. Hopefully that will be something that we'll see 2 years from now, rather than see a drop in voter participation, we'll see folks actually become, as you say, Ryan, whether it's state questions or just the fact that there'll be a lot of folks on the ballot that they should be interested in statewide, that we'll see this continue.
Governor's race and possible marijuana in 2018.
Yeah.
So we'll certainly see that one. Fantastic. Ryan and Eva's comments do not necessarily reflect the views of the ACLU, KOSU, its staff, or management.